Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
My first experience actually was just of watching him, because I wasn't in the first team squad in obviously the first year that Roy was at the club.
Yeah.
And thinking about him, actually I remember playing him right back in a game against Sheffield United, I think at Old Trafford, and thinking of, you know, his versatility at the time and his energy and his power and his strength. And I remember Brian Robson saying that he was, you know, this is one hell of a player. And Brian Robson didn't hand out compliments lightly.
Right.
But obviously, as you then sort of grew into the first team as a young player, you've got to remember at the time there was Robson there, there was Ince, there was Schmeichel, Cantona, Hughes, yeah. Pallister, Bruce. I mean, they were monsters. Every single one of them was a captain, a character, a personality. And Roy at that time probably was younger. I mean, he was younger than those lads, and obviously was a huge personality and character, but it hadn't evolved into what it became at that point, I would say. I think what happened was then, obviously, over a period of time, over sort of 2 or 3 years, those lads started to leave, and then obviously Roy emerged into the person and individual that he was, which was the most inspirational football player that I ever played with, and the most demanding player that I ever played with, and actually someone who mirrored the boss. He mirrored the boss, simple as that, on the pitch. He was so like him in the sense of not accepting of a drop in standard, not accepting, you know, but I always say a bad pass was a crime, let alone, you know, giving goals away or, God forbid, not applying yourself or showing a level of professionalism or effort in training or something like that. So when it comes to the point of sort of the 3-4 years going up to sort of 97, 98, 99, then going beyond that, you're talking about the most formidable football player that you would ever see on a football pitch, the person that everybody in the club wanted to see at the front of the line, bar none. And like I say, when he, I said earlier on today, when he left the club, that was a moment that no one in the football club, in the team, in the dressing room wanted to happen. You know, this idea, and you know, Roy obviously, you know, the perception in terms of what he is as a person, in terms of, you know, everyone thinks about, he said himself, I wasn't ranting and raving all the time. He was popular, incredibly, like, hugely popular, funny. caring, loving.
I get your lollipop here for that game.
I'm sorry.
Will you hold it for me?
sorry, the lollipop.
No, so basically you have this person that you essentially see reported on that you actually don't recognise because you know him in the change room as someone completely different. And to be fair, being with him today, you know, and the people who've been with him today from sort of, you know, from Cadbury's or from, you know, you see a complete, you see the person actually, you see, you know, in that, we did a Q&A at lunch today and you see the individual that he is. But but actually, will not accept a drop in standard, will not accept mediocrity in any way, shape or form. And that seems to be a problem for other people, that he has high standards. But it was never a problem for us in our dressing room. Our dressing room, to be fair, responded to it. If other people don't respond to it, it's because they've never seen the standard that he's aspiring to get to. And I always say in life that people think they work hard. Everyone thinks they work hard until you've seen someone work harder. And then you think, okay, I'll go and aspire to that. And then someone thinks, well, he works hard, but then you work harder again. And then you see someone else. And until you've seen a standard, then you never really know where you're at in life. And that's the reality of life. It's just, you can only really be what you've seen. And we were very fortunate. I had Roy Keane as a captain, Sir Alex Ferguson as a manager, and surrounded by the likes of, you know, growing up, Brian Kidd, Nobby Styles, people who just set the most incredibly high standards, and there was never a break in that. And from our point of view as young lads, of course, there was an element of talent, and we did well, and we were professional, but we had people who basically guided us and mentored us to a level that we could see and think that's what we were trying to climb to all the time. And I think that would be my take on Roy and his career at United and sort of his influence upon the club and ourselves.
The way you talk about Roy there, and you've said before that he made you feel 10 feet tall when you're walking out onto a pitch. Have you ever had anyone else in the dressing room that was in any way comparable?
No, because my captains at United, to be fair, when I broke through were Eric, who was... No, I mean, Eric was an icon, an incredible player, but I personally wouldn't respond to Eric in the way in which I would respond to Roy. Because, to be fair, Eric was different, different leader. He led by example. He was a match winner, very determined, you know, wanted to be the very best that he could. Had incredibly high standards, but, you know, to me, I didn't personally, you know, I responded to him, but not in the way in which, obviously, I would do with Roy. But Steve Bruce was... a great captain, again, who I played under, but again, was different than Roy, different qualities, I would say. I think, to be fair, the person who I would say, in a different way, and I gave him a really hard time because he played in front of me for 2 or 3 years, was Cristiano Ronaldo. But actually, when he got to a level that he did in 2007-08, and I was playing behind him at that time, just before I got injured, I thought it was almost magical, that. Because a player who, to be fair, ignored essentially his position, ignored instruction, didn't defend the way in which you wanted him to defend, defied logic, actually, in terms of how United as a club was over a 15, 20-year period, where everyone defends, everyone attacks, we don't carry anybody. And we didn't carry him by any stretch of the imagination, but if he wanted to play right wing but then decided that he wasn't enjoying it, he'd go and play left, and I'd be like, what are you doing? Get back over here. Yeah. And essentially, that was probably wrong. You know what I mean? Telling Christy. But the reality of it is, he then went on to become something magical for 2 seasons. So not in the same way. I would say that, to be fair, Roy was the most influential player that I ever played with, and there's no one that gets close to him. Yeah. But I suppose in different ways, you could be inspired by Cristiano in a sense.
It's a different kind of thing. Around that time, when you're moving towards the treble, 90s and on, building up towards the treble year, for you, Roy, was Ferguson hands-on with your game? Was he, you know, the way you see Pep when Raheem Sterling comes off and he's like, I want you to do that and that and that, and it's very detailed. What did Ferguson do, if anything, to teach you the game or improve your game? Or what was that relationship?
It wasn't slightly different to the modern manager, sure. No, shall we say. They're more hands-on. I obviously played for great managers, Alex Ferguson and Brian Clough, who was more about man management and managing the group. They weren't really hands-on in terms of the training sessions, but they knew the game inside out. And what I always enjoyed working with them, and I had the same with Martin, with Ireland, they weren't necessarily hands-on coaches, but they knew the game, and their messages were very straightforward and simple. And Alex Ferguson, I'm sure, if he was sitting here, would be the first to say, I think he criticised me a little bit when I left, saying I was trying to run the dressing room, but we did run the dressing room. You know, we did, not just me. You don't have to be a captain to be a leader, but there was brilliant characters. So we took care of all that. We created, I know I'm always a bit wary of using this word, there was a great culture at Man United where it was like a machine. Mm. So the training sessions, and obviously Alex Ferguson was clever, he had always good coaches, the Steve McClarens, Kiddo, obviously earlier. So the sessions were always good, but the players would make the sessions, you know, it'd always be, everyone would, and it seems strange, people look at you and go, we would give it 100% every session we'd done. Doesn't mean to say the quality was always there. You'd have an off day. But Alex Ferguson would step back and almost let the players manage the session and let the coaches get on with it. Yeah. But then I look back at my time with Alex Ferguson, all the team talks he had, is obviously knowledge of the game. And I think the really brilliant managers almost... they smell what needs to be said in the dressing room. Obviously, there's a famous one, what I said in the book, lads, it's Tottenham, you know. And that's probably harsh, probably on Tottenham. But he would come in as a senior player, and Gary would, you know, in a dressing room, and this team talk, this video, you can be brainwashed with all that stuff. And I always felt Alex Ferguson, Brian Clough was the same. I always felt the group of players, they would just say what the group just needed to hear at that particular time, whether it be before the game, half-time. At United, generally speaking, we always played 4-4-2, and it was a case of going at teams. Now, it's the odd time in Europe, we might play a three in the middle, so all our instructions were very, very straightforward. I never felt confused with Alex Ferguson. Ironically, the same with Brian Clough. Before my debut at Liverpool, Brian Clough, in the dressing room before the game, and I kind of have to remind myself of it, he said to me before my debut, he said, I've seen you playing, obviously I'd been playing with the reserves. He says, you can control it, and I said, yeah. He said, you can pass it. I said, yeah, and you can run. And I said, yeah. And he said, well, just do them three things. And that was my career. And people laugh, but a lot of players can't do them things, believe it or not.
Sure.
A lot of professional players can't control it. pass it or run. They might have one or two of the three.
Sure.
So I knew I'd that. So that was my career in a nutshell. Obviously, when I went to United after Forest, obviously the higher level you go up, you have to do it quicker and faster, blah, 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 of course. But Alex Ferguson he was good at managing the group.
Yeah.
Gary mentioned Eric there, for example. He'd be clever with Eric. You know, he'd give Eric... like, for example, it's only a daft little thing, but obviously United was always smart, club suits and all this, and very respectful when we travelled, and Eric might turn up in a suit with a pair of trainers, whereas if that was one of us, you'd definitely be fine or you'd be in trouble. Whereas, oh, Eric, leave him off, he's French, you know, he's... Yeah. You're like, fucking hell, yeah. And then because he knew, he'd manage Eric and he'd go, but then Eric would probably win you the game on the Saturday. To me, that's management. Sure. You know, you have to just kind of give lads a bit of toffee here and there. Gary mentioned Ronaldo. You know, there's stuff Ronaldo was doing in terms of not being a kind of a team player in a sense, but you forgive a fella for that stuff if he's winning you the game. If fellas aren't running back, we used to go mad at Eric sometimes in games. He'd give it away. He'd go, Eric, bang, 1-0, winner, Eric. You go, oh, I'll forgive you for the other stuff.
Yeah.
And that's what good players and good characters do. But, you know, I wouldn't be too critical of Alex Ferguson, I have to say. I'm not one for holding grudges, you know?
No, I've heard that, yeah.
That last sentence was disconnected to the rest of the speech. It was
Well, we did want to talk a bit more about the treble and the years afterwards, but... Well, actually, we'll do that. We'll come to the end with Ferguson and where that is now. You know, when you do your cruciate in 98, is that any kind of turning point for you? Like, I heard different things. I was reading somewhere that you, in that year, might have watched a few games on MUTV, old games, and saw yourself and been a bit unhappy. Because you seem to come back leaner, real peak.
Well, I learned a lot when I was off for the year. But the week in terms of when I'd done my cruciate kind of summed up where I was, really, as a player. Listen, my career was going places and I was at United and things were going great. I think we played Liverpool on the Wednesday night. Leeds was on the Saturday. You know, about learning the game. I think we're all students of the game. Like, I love watching games. No, I'd watch any game.
Right.
So the Wednesday night, I think we beat Liverpool 1-0 and on the Wednesday night, Old Trafford. Always the case. My mentality was always after a game because I was quite an intense person after a game. And these were bad habits I was after getting into, particularly when I played League of Ireland, when I went to Forest. It was always a case of definitely go for a few pints after the game. Always, you know, win or lose, all that, hit the booze. I'd always go for a few pints. That was my way of switching off. Other people would do other stuff. I'd go, no, listen, I'm going for a few pints. So went out on the Wednesday night. And when you go out after a game, it's going to be a late night because by the time you start drinking, it's 11 o'clock. And if you want to get steamed up, it's going to be 3 or 4. And I'm serious. So anyway, Wednesday night, I remember I left the hotel. I was drinking at this bar near Old Trafford. I'll try and fast forward the story. Ended up having an argument with a fella. We're playing Leeds on the...
Would that happen often on the drink?
No, right. Once a week. Very rare, Jesus. So we played Leeds on the Saturday morning. I remember we were losing and Haaland had been irritating me for a number of years anyway. And I'd done something daft. I don't think I deserved to snap my knee.
Yeah.
And because we used the subs, I had to go back on. And after the game, the physio, Dave Fever, was a brilliant physio, ex-Wigan rugby league physio. So he knew all about cruciates. And in the dressing room, my knee, I knew I was in trouble. You know, Jesus, you know, I didn't need a surgeon to tell me. And he said, yeah, you're in a bad way with the knee. Had an operation. I remember having an operation and had to let the knee settle down. Had a cruciate operation about 5-6 weeks later. And then you are at a crossroads. I would have been 28, and I'm going. So I had the operation, and I remember speaking to two surgeons at United for some reason. I had two surgeons looking after me, which was brilliant. So they gave me the lecture at the hospital. You know, you're at a crossroads with your career, but if you do things properly, you should be all right. You know, you're still a number of years left in your career. Sports science changed, and you've got a great physio. And I'm nodding my head going, yeah, you know, I love being fit anyway, and it's a setback, but I'll deal with it. And I literally went out that night for a few pints on crutches, Yet the surgeons are telling me you're at a crossroads. I'm going, yeah, brilliant, yeah, brilliant. Yeah. I'll do everything to come back. Oh, but I'm going out tonight. And so there was elements. And then when you're out for the year and at the old training ground, the cliff, it's not like the modern gyms now. There's no windows. And you're just and it's a lonely place when you're injured. But I kind of enjoyed that determination to get back. But you do analyse your game. I wasn't necessarily going to watch United games, but I would look at other teams. I'd look at other midfielders. And obviously made a promise to myself, and that's when I said I'd better cut myself on, that when I come back, I would... And so, unfortunately, sometimes you need a bad injury, and I'm sure there's people here who played sports, you need a bad injury to appreciate the game a bit more, even though I always felt I loved the game, but maybe, just maybe, I was taking things for granted with my lifestyle and drinking after games and all this carry on. So when I came back from the cruciate, I was quite... But I came back quite lean and ready to kickstart my career again. But then on the other hand, then I went to extremes. You know, I looked towards the end of my career, even though I was 31, 32, body fat levels, I was really gaunt looking. I took diets to the extremes. You know, a lot of sports people are extremists, and I went then too far the other way. I remember I went to a detox in Milan. Do you know, the lads used to go to that, Giggsy, and some of the French lads went to a detox place in Milan for 4 days, and I was like, oh, I'll try that, you know. And they said for 4 days or 5 days, you go to 4 or 5 days, I went, but you don't get fed in 4 or 5 days. I remember going, surely they'll give you a pizza in the evening or something. And I went, and they don't feed you for 4 or 5 days. And I remember coming back and my wife, and I was trying all these diets, fish, no protein and carb. And I just remember, I was kind of cold all the time and I kept getting dead legs. And it only takes your mother to tell you. My mother came over. Again, I was about 30, 31. She went, what's happened to you? And I went, you know, I'm kind of a fitness freak now. You know, I'm just eating salads all the time. And listen, when you play in the middle of the park in Premiership games, salads will not do, you know. Fucking trust me. You need a bit of red meat. You need proper... So from being a bit of a fool and being a boy on out and about drinking, I then went too far extreme on the diets. Right. And eventually I caught myself on and... And what I try and do now, Chris, if I can, with the food, not everything in moderation.
Okay.
It's a long answer, that, wasn't it?
Good,
really?
Good. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, but the cruciate was a learning curve for me.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely.
I think, to be fair, what Roy's just said mirrored, actually, the Premier League.
Sure.
Because... when we came into the first team, the lads would go out after a game on a Wednesday, and they'd go out after a game on a Saturday, and sometimes even some go out on a Sunday. And as young lads, we'd been educated in sort of like a new type of way that this wasn't good for you, this wasn't right. The nutritionist was in there, and Trevor came in, but you had this sort of like six players left in the team that had been part of what had been the sort of culture under, you know, you remember when I first came into the team, Steve Bruce, Brian Robson, Paul, it was normal to do this, Pally. And we were sort of part of like the Premier League, and it just changed completely. Wenger came in, nutritionist came in, and what Roy's just talked about there is actually the evolving nature between what was the essentially 70s and 80s and the Premier League, which became, if you like, a far more professional sports science-based years. But what happened was that everybody then, you know, your body fat went down to 5-6%, which is just, it's ridiculous.
What were you?
About 7.5-8. And I was 13 when I joined the club. But then the problem is, it became a point of how low can you get, how perfect can you become, how professional can you become. We were already sort of, because we'd been, the boss had tried to change the culture generally, even when he first came to the club, you know, he tried to move it a little bit, he knew that it was changing. But to be fair, what Roy's career, to be fair, does is actually split that. He's lucky that he was able to change. Some players, you know, the particular ones that I played with England, were not able to actually go from being a player that did that to a player that then became, if you like, a modern player, one that actually bought in and was open to sports science.
Sorry to interrupt. Was that a hard change? Like, are you sitting there on a Wednesday going...
It was a bit... I'm better off to talk about this than him.
Yeah.
Because I witnessed it. I saw it. You know, I saw it in him in terms of everybody did in the change room, this massive big, this big moment of shift, complete shift. You know, not that he wasn't unprofessional before. He was basically doing what every other player was doing for sort of 25, 30 years. But then to actually just say, no, I'm going to absolutely change, it's a massive shift that in your life. And people who've made those sort of big changes and big shifts I'd say it was 99, 2000, wasn't it? It was 99, 2000 this happened. And all of a sudden his fitness, his, like I say, his body fat, but everyone else then responded to that. Okay. Because if the best player in the team and the most influential player is here again, getting to 5, 6%, you can't be 12. You can't be 9. You've got to try and... And that's essentially, again, a driving of standard. And I think that was pushed right the way through. And obviously, sports science now has changed again. But it was a massive shift. I genuinely believe we won the league 5 times in 6 years, from 95 through to 2001. Obviously, there's an element of talent. But I think fitness was I think we were fitter. We were more professional. You remember the Spice Boys of the time? You know, Neil Ruddock, Phil Babb, Jason McAteer, Fowler, John Scales, you know, all them lads, they loved a pint. And do you know something? A pint of beer will cost you the league if you drink 10 a night, 3 times a week. And the fact of the matter is, if you've got a team that's drinking 6, 7 pints 3 times a week, or 6, 7 pints twice a week, and you've got a team that are not drinking 6, 7 pints twice a week, forget talent, forget professionalism. Yeah. The difference is enormous in terms of how you feel. You know how you feel yourselves when you have a pint, you wake up the morning after and you go to work and it's like, it's fucking hard work. You do that twice a week, but you actually go in fresh and don't drink for a week and try and you feel, poof, I feel. And that's the relative, is you eat better, you look after yourself more, and you'll be mentally stronger, you'll be physically better. And actually that can be, if someone's even 10% more talented than you, you'll jump above them.
Sure.
And I genuinely believe that's what happened at United for a period of 4 or 5 years. And that's why Arsenal, to be fair, under Arsene Wenger, were strong.
And it can't be a coincidence that as that change of mindset's happening, you go and win the treble. And we could talk about that for an hour and the memorable games during the run-in. Is there one moment that sort of 20 years on that you still cherish of that time? Can you narrow it down?
What, to that one season, you mean?
To that run-in.
I just think it was a combination of a lot of stuff. There's never, a lot of fans seem to remember certain games, a semi-final or the final, but sometimes I'd always go back, and even through a league campaign, there might be a victory you might have had in March or something, and you just knew at the time this was a vital victory. Of course, again, people will remember maybe towards the finishing line. But there's no games really stand out for me where I go, yeah, that was a turning point. I think it was a combination of many years of hard work. You go back to 99, for example, but what you need in sport as well, and I think we're the first to admit as well, we can sit up all night and say, talent, lads worked hard, but you need a bit of luck in this game. Plenty of breaks in that season. If you remember, even 10 to people get even the first leg in the semi-final, Juventus should have won the game at Old Trafford. Do you remember, Gary? Yeah. You're probably better, memory's better than mine. But they had 2 or 3 great chances. The game should have been dead and buried. But what you have to do at the top level sport as well, and United, again, your memory can play tricks on you as if United, we were brilliant every week and winning games comfortably. No, we weren't. But what we do, we'd stay in games. Or we'd keep going till the end. Again, go back to it, no coincidence, a lot of late goals, etc. And that's, and honestly, a bit of luck. You need a bit of luck along the way.
Have you allowed yourself to concede that having played 12 or 13 games in the Champions League that you were a massive part of them winning the European Cup, or is there an asterisk in your head?
I suppose deep down, I probably don't feel I have won it. No, but
genuine.
But I don't necessarily want 1 or 2 games to try and define my career either. And again, I remember thinking at the time, well, hopefully the danger in sport is where you go, well, hopefully get back next year or the year after. And then you find out your career's over. You go, I didn't get back to another final. There's other semi-finals, I think it was Leverkusen games you think probably should have won. So when you do get these moments, you have to try and enjoy them. But when I see other players, I know the format's changed. I think, again, for that season, the Champions League games, I think there was 13 or 14 games in total. And obviously I played in every one bar the final. Do I feel like I deserve the medal? You know, strange enough, probably not. But that's no big deal. That was the game we're in. The way I played, I always played on the edge. I was always going to pick up a few yellow cards. I was always going to pick up injuries. I was going to get sent off the odd time. That was the way I played. So I can't be picking and choosing and going, well, I had a decent career. Yeah, I had a decent career because I had to play that way. If I remember sometimes there'd be games, particularly pre-season or... just say, for example, pre-season or maybe friendly games. Unless I was really kind of really at it, I was such a bad player. I kind of had to be at it 100%. That intensity, what gave me the career. So I can't then, on one hand, go, yeah, but I ended up missing that final. But I wouldn't have had the career without that. So I can't. You can't have your cake and eat it. You know, there was going to be sacrifices along the way, and that was going to be me missing games. Obviously, same for Scholesy. Scholesy obviously was fortunate enough to get back a few years later when they beat Chelsea. But I it doesn't keep me awake at night. I don't go to bed at night going, I wish I didn't get a yellow card in this game. People always remember the yellow card I got in the semi-final, but I'd obviously got a yellow card against Inter Milan in the quarter-final, and I knew once I got the yellow card in the quarter-final, I thought I'll do well to get through the next few games.
Right.
So, yeah. But that's life. No big deal.
Yeah.
I think the type of team that we had. I mean, Scholesy and Roy missed the final. But I also think they're the type of people that if they'd not played in the previous 12 and only played one game in the final, they would also say that they didn't deserve it.
Probably, yeah.
They're the type of people those two were.
Yeah.
They wouldn't take credit for, you know, they don't feel like they should win it because they didn't play in the final, but if they'd played no games up to the final and just played in the final, they'd probably think that they didn't deserve it as well, and that's the sort of...
Sorry to interrupt, just while you're talking and that picture's up, can you remember, are you just thinking there, just smile, Roy, smile?
Yeah, you know, it's weird. I think we'd gone back into the dressing room. I think we'd been back in. I think me and Scholes had gone in, and the players were coming in and some of the staff saying, you've got to go out and all this, and you were like, You know, like, whatever you say, obviously you're kind of putting on an act there.
You've been out for lunch that day, though, haven't you?
No, I don't think so. No, we hadn't. But what we had, to, in fairness, we had a good crack a few days. The benefit of being suspended, me and Scholesy were out every night, a couple of nights before the game.
I thought you were a professional then.
There was definitely an element, because after the game, I think we obviously stayed up all night, as you would drinking and eating salads. And we... I think me and Scholesy were definitely worst in the morning, but I think there was an element of drowning our sorrows as well. But we had a couple of nights out in Barcelona because I was rooming with Dennis Irwin, and I don't think Dennis was too pleased with me because I was kind of coming in early in the morning, and I don't think I was jumping on him or messing around, but he could hear me coming in, and he's getting ready for a match, so I was a bit unprofessional for them few days.
I always remember Scholesy coming over to me in the pre-match and shaking my hand and thinking, fuck. Do you know the emoji? It's like, he don't know about emojis, so.
there is footage after the semi-final in Turin when everybody goes back into the dressing room and Dwight York is dancing around in celebration and you're on one side of the dressing room and Paul Scholes is on the other side and you just can't be with it. And
yeah, but do you know what, even if I wasn't suspended, I don't think I would have been jumping around like Yorkie anyway. People think even we won certain big games, I don't think I was ever one for like going overboard, especially semi-final, because remember you still think, well, we still have to win the final. I would have been happy, of course, but I wouldn't have been jumping around the place anyway, even if I wasn't suspended. And also part of the upset, I think, was probably the same for Scholesy as well in United. You're also missing out on a pretty big bonus, you know, for the final. So that,
you get that
hurt. I got it back in my next contract in the negotiations. But I know the rules have changed. I think if players are suspended now, they can play and all this. And I think that's probably right, because I think it's hard. After 12 games, a player can be suspended for the final.
Terrible,
you know, it's tough on players, but that's life. Yeah. Jesus, worst thing's happening.
It's funny, every time you say final now, I just see Ian Wright in my head screaming, final, final, final.
Who?
Ian Wright. We won't go into it, the World Cup last year.
No, I thought you were going to mention John Terry.
No. You know, you're those few years after the treble, this brilliant team, not an old team, you know, you guys are early 20s, you're peak, and you're winning the championships pretty easy domestically, and then you mentioned the Leverkusen game, there's...
Well, you said you're winning the championships easily.
Yeah. Hard?
Yeah, you don't win championship easily. Don't kid yourself. Man.
I'd accept that.
Let's get the facts right here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's the Liverpool fans, don't you?
Yeah, no, fair point. You're winning them well by a good margin.
Yeah, but it was tough.
Yeah, and it was tough. You mentioned the Leverkusen game.
There was the Madrid game.
Yeah.
There was Bayern Munich. The Porto won. Mourinho. Like, this is the wrong way of putting it, so go easy on me here with this word. Did that team underachieve not to win a second European Cup? Or what happened? Or did the game move on and 4-4-2 didn't cut it? Or what's your sense of what happened that team?
No, there was definitely... I definitely felt at the time the group of players we had, I think if I'd won the Champions League even once, but, you know, I don't think that would have satisfied me. We always felt, especially some of the games we, I think we let go, a couple of semi-finals that you've just mentioned, yeah. I think the Leverkusen game certainly, and obviously the Marino, the Porto one, I think that was a quarter-final. But that's top-level sport. You know, it's cruel.
Yeah.
So you again, you're on about easy. You have to go and earn the right to win it, and you need a bit of luck. You know, you look at the Porto game. I think, again, my memory's not great, but we definitely won up scores. He had a goal, didn't he, disallowed, which was, I think it was some dodgy linesman. Anyway, obviously, there was no VAR. And these are moments, these are defining moments in a game where you go, if you can get over the line with that. But
sorry, you didn't detect any sense of, we've won the treble. Well, hey, in any parts of the dressing room, like...
No chance. No, that wouldn't happen. And I go back to it earlier about, there was certainly a... I never, in my time at Man United, I ever was in a dressing room where there'd be pre-season after we'd won something or, listen, we'd big disappointments, where I felt, as a group of players, we felt... You know, this is great. We're the main. We just have to turn up, and it doesn't happen that way. I never felt at United. Well, Gary might be different, but I never felt. I just always felt that there was a bloody desire there. There was a hunger. Yeah, it came down from the manager and the staff, the demands of the supporters. I even remember when I went to United. People talk about pressure. People are always using that word pressure. Pressure's great. Pressure's brilliant. Imagine playing for a team where there was no pressure.
Yeah.
You guys at United, 70,000 every week, home and away, the fans travel, the demands they're putting you. I used to love that. I always worry when people don't put demands on you or don't put pressure on you.
Yeah.
Jesus, there's something drastically wrong there. But we were never blasé about our success. We never thought next year will be easy. You know, sometimes you might just win a league and you go, is it that enough? Should we be winning more Champions League? Should we, you know, FA Cup doubles, surely we should be winning more doubles and all this. It's tough going. It's okay. Tough going winning these titles.
And would you be having those conversations in the dressing room when you come back in for pre-season when you didn't have the success in Europe?
No, I think it was just, you just smell it in the air going, no, lads, we've got to kick on again. And when we did win the odd trophy, you'd move on pretty quickly. Listen, you'd go out, we've had great nights and the drink, brilliant. Of course, you have to switch off as well. And you have to celebrate the highs in sport because you actually don't get that many. But also, you have to move on quickly. I see and hear players celebrating a bit of success they had 10 years ago. Even though when people say to, I don't know what Gary's like, when they say to me, go, oh, you had a good career, I kind of cringe going, just move on. Jesus Christ, it was a number of years ago. And when you're playing for Man United, and people go, oh, you won a few trophies. Well, yeah. What do you expect? We weren't playing for Yeovil. Man United, we're going to win trophies with bloody good players, with a good manager, great support, great characters. Jesus, work it out. We're going to be in the mix.
So simple.
Did you get any sense that there was any kind of hint of resting on laurels or anything post-treble?
No, I mean, the club were, I suppose in some ways, we lost Peter Schmeichel.
Yeah.
And it was a huge influence on our team in terms of his presence, character, his ability. We didn't, as a club, we didn't, we weren't aggressive in the transfer market after the treble for probably 2 or 3 years, which probably because of the, ultimately culminated in the fact that we had a fantastic squad. But then obviously from a point of view, I did think we missed Peter, you know.
Through a few different keepers.
Yeah, it became that period, which was probably we won the league for 2 years, but then after that we had a difficult few years. And it culminated in, not I can't blame the goalkeepers, but just essentially it's such an essential position.
Yeah.
And then when Edwin came back in, it seemed to sort of change again a little bit because obviously he was a big player. But no, I mean, Roy makes everything sound very simple, because I think, to be fair, you can simplify life into, you know, when people say, what is achievement? Achievement is, to be fair, giving your all every single day and never giving in. And if you think like that every single day, I think that was just an essential thing. There was never sort of like, you know, there was never inquests or, you know, these sort of big, you know, Churchillian speeches at the start of the year, where you'd say, you know, everyone's got to do it again this year. It was just a matter of course. That's what happened. You just came back in and you trained and you basically worked as hard as you possibly could and you never gave in. And the standard, to be fair, you know, you obviously you were there for a reason in the first place, that you had a level of talent that the manager believed in, so you trust him on that side. And then the other bit was down to the players in terms of their ability and their willingness to want to do it again. And there's no doubt the manager would have obviously jumped upon it if he sensed that, you know, a player didn't meet the quality standard or didn't meet the effort or the sort of, if you like, the determination part. So I think it was quite simple. You can complicate life. I mean, every single one of us in here has a choice every single day whether we want to get up in the morning, do our very best, and never give in. That is it. That if you can say at the end of your sort of working day each day that you've done that, then what more can you do? Yeah. And I think that's what happened at United. And where Roy tries to obviously, you know, explain there about the standards and the work ethic, every single player was like that. Every single player. There wasn't anybody that dropped below that standard, always, because the standard had been set by the senior players and by the manager.
Yeah. Roy, your final year is obviously abruptly ended. It seems, reading various things you've written or interviews about it, like the chemistry was off, there were rumblings from a few months out, even pre-season in Portugal, argument over whether you want to stay in the villa where you feel more comfortable with your family and Carlos Queiroz, and then you break your foot and you come back and Queiroz isn't overly welcoming, you feel, when you come back. Chuxi Abib, you stand up front, you be up front. Yeah, I'm sure your reaction. What, did you get a bad feeling? Like, did you feel something's really off here and this is going to end?
Yeah, there was. Again, you're talking about going back pre-season. I remember it was the first time at United, they said, remember the families come and join us in Portugal pre-season. Yeah. I was a great lover of that stuff. You know, I always think if you're training, you're professional, keep the families away, you know. Just have boundaries, even with your own family. But I won't bore you up. But yeah, Carlos was a strange one. Carlos, even when I came back, and this was before when I broke my foot at Liverpool, I'd hurt my hamstring in pre-season. I remember I was due to come back, and I kept, usually when you're injured and you're a first team player, you go back and you train with the reserves for a week or two. That's course, and you get your fitness levels up. But he was keeping me, he was saying, no, you're not ready to join back in. And I don't know if Gary remembers. I remember eventually I did come back in and back in training with the first team, and this was still early in the season. I want you to stand there on the training pitch and we go, yeah, we're going to have an aviator, and even here's your teams. And I remember, I'll never forget it. And I remember Carlos, and he kind of called out the teams. And I stood there, and I was stood there. And again, I'm a senior player at the club who I thought I'd had a decent career at United. I was into my last year of my contract, and I probably thought this would probably be my last year anyway. I never felt the club owed me anything. I had no hang-ups or any of that stuff. No problem. Listen, I had a good go off it. And there was incidents, and I said, oh, Carlos, and I was stood there, and I always remember, I don't know if Gary remembers it, and he picked up a bib, and he just threw it at me. He says, you just stand up front. I remember going, okay. You know, he's added to the list. But because I was on the train, going, listen, I've done it. Again, if people think, I didn't kick off, and I remember the players afterwards going, Jesus, you were calm with all that stuff. I says, yeah. And then later on when I broke my foot, and strangely enough, we go back to this famous video I was supposed to have done. I'm going to blame Gary a little bit for this, because I think Gary was supposed to do the game, but I was back out with my broken foot, and the manager said to me, if you want to go off on holiday, and I ended up in Dubai, and the United game against Middlesbrough was on the television in the hotel, and I'm watching it, and I swapped. Gary was doing the game, and I definitely, do you remember? Yeah, and I swapped with Gary. I said, well, I do that game because I'm not here. Each player took a turn every week of analysing the game you just played in MUTV under the United umbrella. So I came back and I had to do the Middlesbrough game, where I think it was 4-1 or 4-2. I think Middlesbrough won 4-1 or 4-2 or something. So I'm watching the game, as you do for MUTV. It's half an hour. You analyse, you go, oh, I thought you could have done better. No. I didn't think it was anything too dramatic.
What's the worst? What's genuinely? What would you feel might have been the worst thing you said, or the thing that would have crossed the line publicly?
I can tell.
I'd get rid of all of them. No, I am. No, I'm the first to be critical of myself. But afterwards, when the next few days were really took off, whereas the video has been destroyed, I'm going, destroyed. That's a bit strong. Jesus. Because I remember thinking that going, and then I started to doubt myself, what did I say on the video? And then the United spin, and I think because I was into the man last year, Carlos definitely had issues with me. Whether he thought I was too strong in the dressing room, I don't know. And there was definitely a bit of tension there. There's no getting away from it. Yeah. In all my time at United, sometimes there was tension early in my career. I remember I fell out with Alex Ferguson about, and I think he was going to say, "I'm going to Leeds were in for me" or something at the time. And Robbo was at Middlesbrough and in his office, and it was proper heated, you know. But I was kind of really important asset to Man United then. I was now 34. I was trying to see it from their point of view. He's 34. He's the captain. He's maybe losing his way a little bit, my influence on the team, even though my last game was at Anfield. We drew nil. I remember I was able to hold my own. I don't think my career was... I was in free fall, yeah, because I was doing a job in the middle of the park sitting there, which I think I could have done with my eyes closed anyway because my experience. So then this video thing started really getting nasty and the media were saying, I remember going, where's this going to, this kind of video thing? And eventually with Ferguson, and then before we know, we're having a heated argument in front of all the players. My only consolation before I left Man United, and as I said, I'm forced to say if I've kind of stepped out of line. But put it this way, Man United, for the video, I got a letter about a week later. United tried to fine me £5,000 for my video. £5,000, trust me. I've been fined a lot more at Man United for sending offs. So £5,000, a player gets you get fined £5,000 for being late.
Sure.
That was a kind of small fine. And I remember I appealed it. I said, I'm not paying the £5,000. I did. I've been fined before. I've been fined literally hundreds of thousands of pounds. And I went, yeah, I'll take it. I got sent off. I shouldn't have. Never appealed anything. And I think because I appealed a fine, I'm sure, I think Ferguson went, oh, you're kind of challenging me now.
Yeah.
But I wasn't paying no fine because I thought the video was fine. And the key for me, again, kind of skipping a few bits and pieces here, I ended up watching the video with the players and the staff. And I remember we were all walking up to watch the video. Listen, Gary might say something different, I don't. And I remember walking up to the video with the players. I went, we need to watch this because, lads, this is not true. I was supposed to have spoken about players' wages. I had no interest in other people's wages. That was none of my business.
Yeah.
But I think United was giving that stuff out. I think the United machine was like, come on, you know, especially with the World Cup after Saipan, people were saying, yeah, well, let's just paint the picture. People need to look at the facts. And we ended up, and I went, can we watch the video? This video that was destroyed. And we watched the video, and I remember looking and going, I hope it's not as bad as I think.
Yeah.
And when I watched it, it was okay. I didn't think for 1 minute I was out of order. I was like, oh, thank God. And then the manager put it to all the players. We were in his office. He went, lads, have any of you got a problem? I think Fletch said something, or maybe you could have been a bit easy on something, but not in too major. All the other players are going, no, we know, Roy, we got beaten 4-1 or 4-2. I had to do the video. It could have been Gary's. It could have been me the following week doing a game we'd won. What was I supposed to say? Oh, the lads played great. We lost 4-1 or 4-2. And then that's when, and before you know it, Carlos said something to me. I told him where to go. And then, the madness of it all, you're on about, I'm an experienced player. I was 34 at the time. A week or two later, I was getting due to play a reserve game. Alex Ferguson wouldn't let me play in it. He said, get your solicitor up. And I remember meeting my solicitor on I think it was a Friday morning. I met him at a hotel near the airport. He'd come up from London. And he said, what's this meeting about? I've been called up to see him. And I said, no, they probably want to get rid of me. What? He couldn't believe it. And Michael is a clever guy, good at negotiation. He'd done my contracts at United. I think United had a lot of respect for him. So we go in to see United, me and Michael. This was about 9 o'clock. The players obviously were playing on the train on the Friday. We were playing, I think, Charlton away on the Saturday. Again, stop me if I'm wrong. I'll wait till I'm finished. So I go into an office. And these are your questions. So I go into an office, David Gill's there with Alex Ferguson. I'd worked with Alex Ferguson for 12 and a bit years. If he wanted to say, right, chat, listen, our days are numbered, your contract under summer, we'd shake hands. No problem. Yeah. Listen, I'll survive, don't worry. And David, he said, look, Roy, I think we've come to the end of it. And I remember looking at him going, right. Yeah. And my solicitor's like, he's gone white, Michael. And he says, yeah, we've done a statement, passed across the statement. I went, right. We'd like to thank you for 11 and a half years of service. And I went, all right. I said, just to let you know, I've been here 12 and a half, you know. This is true, but this is all part of the game, you know, and the two of them looked at each other, David Gill and Ferguson, going, oh, is it 12 and a half? Oh, is it 12? I said, yeah, I came the first year we won the double, you know. All right. And they said, we give you and Michael 5 minutes yourselves or whatever. And I said, well, if I leave, can I sign for somebody? And Ferguson went, yeah, because your contract would be terminated. And this was a Friday. I remember going, right, forget about payoffs and all that, carry on. And he left, and my solicitor was with Michael, and Michael went, what do you reckon to this? I went, yeah, let's get out of here. Yeah, right, no. I said, no. And what I should have done, obviously, listen, I should have done my homework. I should have found out if I could sign for a team, because ultimately this was what I think. And I remember I was still coming back from my broken foot.
Yeah.
I wasn't up to speed. I obviously later found out that weekend I couldn't go to a club until January, which caused problems because of my fitness levels. And that was the end of it. And I remember going home, and I was home at all 9:30. It's not as if I dragged out for the day and negotiate. Yeah. And Michael stayed there. He was doing the contract. And I remember Michael ringing me home going, United, apparently they've got cash flow problems in terms of any money. You know, they can stick it, you know. Listen, you know, Man United cash flow problems, do me a favour. And and that was it. But then all the other stuff that came out afterwards, as if I'd done something really bad. But I, as much as I'm not one for carrying grudges, I wouldn't forgive Ferguson for that. No, and again, I'm the first to say, if he shut me and go, listen, right, go in January, go on, no problem. And then obviously you leave then the kind of media spin-off. I was ranting and raving, I'd upset everybody, all nonsense. But listen, I've been on that road before.
On that, in the office. So, and Gary, I'll bring you in 1 second, but... So
there was one other player said something, I remember.
No,
there was. Edwin van der Sar said something. Edwin had been in the door about 2 minutes. And he went... No, he'd been at the club, and I remember he was doing interviews left, right, and said, and I remember when I said, lads, Emily, you got a problem, Fletcher, and you could have said that different. I said, yeah, maybe. But he went, yeah, we get it, no problem. And Edwin had his hand up. He went, Roy, I think you could have been a bit... I went, Edwin, I think I told Edwin to shut up. I said, Edwin, I said, you've been at this club 2 minutes. You've done more interviews in the last 2 months than I've done in 12 and a half years. So he was the only one who got a little bit of stick in the meeting.
Yeah. To be fair, in your book, and then Gary, please come in. But
Gary would probably say the opposite.
Well, maybe, just, yeah. So. No, in your own book, though,
I've got some questions.
Yeah, well, then come in straight after. But in your own book, you would concede.
No, the better than yours, honestly.
I know, I'm sure.
Can I
just, because you would say that you turn to.
Do you?
It's just a point. I just want to see if we're talking.
It's not more important than the point I'm going to make. So just be quiet for 1 second. So at the beginning of the season, I'd seen this happen with David Beckham over a period of sort of 6 to 8 months at United. I'd seen it happen with you seen it happen with maybe other players. I think with Roy and the manager, there was always a chance that this was going to come to this. Always a chance that this was going to come to this because I said before they were absolute mirrors of one another. Unforgiving, wouldn't back down on anything, stubborn but not in a way which is negative, but incredibly, their view, stuck to it, had to be sure about it, authoritative. In pre-season, we went to Portugal and Roy was staying at a resort down the road. We arrived at the resort up the road, literally about a mile away. The whole team was staying at this resort up the road.
No, they weren't, Gary.
They were.
Your brother didn't stay at the resort.
They did.
Scorsese didn't stay at the resort.
No, they didn't.
Their families, and they were going back to their families in the evenings.
No. So, no,
I guarantee you.
No. So, right. So basically, Roy was staying at a resort called Quinta del Lago, and the team was staying at a resort called Val de Lobo. And he came up, and to be fair, I think your villa was unsatisfactory.
I had my wife and 5 children with me.
Yeah. So he was pissed off.
Like a two-bedroom place. Yeah.
So he basically went back down the road to stay in the complex. So that was the first thing that happened in pre-season. I was actually training with Roy for about 6 weeks in the gym before this happened, and it was building up. There were things happening where you could see this moment was sort of coming. And on the day of the meetings that Roy mentions, I mean, I swapped with him. I was supposed to be doing that Middlesbrough MUTV thing. And I swapped with him because of...
I was injured.
He was injured, and I don't know how it happened, but we swapped, basically. We're both injured, but Roy had been away or something like that. Anyway, the manager came down into the dressing room, and... the minute that he said, you need to watch the video, everyone needs to watch the video, and you said, yeah, come on, let's go upstairs, I thought, that's it. I just knew. I knew Roy, I knew the manager, he knew the manager. I just thought that was it. There was no way that he was going to step back. There was no way the manager was going to step back. There were things that were said in that room, to be honest with you, that I thought. There was a moment where you spoke to Carlos, and I think he said something to the manager that I remember. I'm not going to, it's for you to say whether you want to say. I thought, no, there's no way that this is going to carry on. I was hoping it could. I think Roy makes a point earlier that's absolutely true. I think if Roy had been 27, 28, at the level playing that he probably was at 27, 28, I think he did say things when he was 27, 28 that you could deem to be unacceptable. But I think at 34, it was just coming to an end. And I'm asked Roy the question, and I know, would you, the manager, have got rid of Roy Keane, the player, after that meeting? I think you would.
No.
I think you would. I'm not asking you a question.
Well, the meeting was right at the end, but I wouldn't have let it get to that.
No, but I think if a player come into the dress, I think if that meeting was horrific, by the way. I mean, it was.
Which meeting? The meeting in the dressing room?
No, the meeting where we watched the video. It was horrific. Let's be clear here. No, I'm not. It's not funny, honestly. There were some lines in there that were... No, honestly, it was horrific.
What are you talking about, the video or the meeting?
The video, the meeting... the watching of the video, then the meeting after that, which was basically Roy and the manager, Carlos, Edward, the bit that... It was horrific. For lads in the dressing room...
He has it in his book, what he said to Kieros and Ferguson.
Yeah. So. For the lads in the dressing room who had obviously been at the club for 10, 15 years... To see this happening, it was horrific. Honestly, I mean, we spoke up, you know, Giggsy would speak up, I would speak up. You couldn't say anything. You could not say anything. It was, you thought, oh, for fuck's sake. You knew that that was it.
I didn't.
You didn't?
I didn't.
I genuinely believe that Roy Keane, the manager, would have gotten rid of Roy Keane, the player, that day.
No, Gary, you're so wrong, man.
No, I think you would. I think he would. But actually, from our point of view, as players, we didn't have a problem. We did not have a problem because we worked with Roy for 12 years. From our point of view, I think his interview after Bayern Munich maybe in 2002, where he went straight on to ITV at the time, I thought that was probably more harsh than maybe the stuff that was said on the video on the day. You remember you questioned...
Yeah, but the manager didn't mind me doing stuff like
no,
that.
No, that's what I mean. That's my point. I thought that was actually worse from a point of view of more public. It was more... So for me, I was sat there thinking, fuck, this is horrific. It's a bad meeting. It was a shocking day. It was a shocking day, honestly, it was. And I can only say that from a point of view. Every player in that dressing room walked out of that room that day thinking, fuck hell, something's going to give here. Something's going to give. And it had been coming on it for a month. It had been coming for a month or 6 weeks. There was something else happened. I can't remember what it was. Something else happened before that, I think. There was something else happened. I thought, I'd seen it with Bex. You know, where that relationship starts is how Bex has, you know, been in the stand at Leeds, if you remember.
Yeah.
And you just see it happening, you just think...
It'd be easy to look at that as a sliding doors moment of you swapping to do that Middlesbrough game, but the way you're talking, even if you hadn't gone on MUTV, something would have happened around then?
No,
was the writing on the wall?
I see it slightly different to Gary, as I would do, because I was obviously in the middle of it. But even, again, I suppose my few hang-ups is there was all that tension. I just say, it was coming to a breaking point. Then you handle it differently. Would it be, I'm sitting down with David Gill and they're passing me statements about how long I've been at the club, cash flow problems, leaving, you can sign for another club. These are just lies. That's the bit.
We didn't say
that. Yeah, of course.
I'm hearing this for the first time, that bit. I mean, I'd not heard that, but we obviously were, after the Friday, the Wednesday, whatever it was, Tuesday or Wednesday, the meeting happened with the video. What happened after that? I don't think you came in. Did you not come in for 2 days, or did you come in?
I think I was, yeah.
Oh, was you?
Yeah, where else would I gone?
To your own villa in Portugal, mate.
Can I ask?
I tell you, the strange thing about the villa, I go back to this. You started something. No, let me finish this now.
He came up, he said...
Because your brother's involved in this. I'd been on holiday for a week. This is vital. I came up with Carlos because he's Portuguese. It was his pal doing all the villas. Brought me to this villa. My daughter's here tonight and she'll back me up. She was one at the time, but she'd back me up. We walked around. My wife is a very placid woman, believe it or not. And we walked around this villa. Carlos was involved in it. And I remember going, there's glass tables. There was a plunge pool. It was like three bedrooms. And I'm going, this won't do with the family. Just obviously, I'm with five kids at the time. I'm going, no. And I remember saying to Carlos, but we've just, and I rang the people who we just left the villa from. And we were paying that. And I went, is it available for another week? And ironically, what I found out later on, Scolesy wasn't staying on the resort. He was staying down with his family. No big deal. And I think Phil and the manager eventually got upset at me. But what he was doing was organising lunches. And I guarantee you, me and my wife and my family were at every lunch and every meal where all the other players were off doing. So this idea that I was off-site and doing my own thing. And I remember the manager came. He came out 1 or 2 days late. That was it. And Carlos obviously was saying, oh, I had a fallout with Roy and he's staying at this villa. And Ferguson pulled me in again in the dressing room and the players were effing and blind and going, I said, what is the pick? Like, really, to me, going, you, and I felt like saying, well, there's other players staying outside, but I didn't want to throw them under the bus with me. And I remember going, what? And it, really over the top stuff. And I remember we were training the next day, and typical Ferguson, we're all doing stretches. And he walks over, if you remember this, because the owner of the complex as well, or one of the owners was a Dutch guy. Ferguson, do you remember? Yeah. So we're all sitting there doing stretches. We're all doing stretches. First came over, I'm looking for some senior players. Walk past me, obviously. Forget that I'm the captain. I need some senior players, you know. Gary, Ryan, and whoever it was. You've got to go for the Chinese tonight. Am I right? Was it a Chinese?
I think it may have been, yeah.
Yeah. Fucking Chinese. And if we're going for the Chinese. Yeah, without you, Roy, you know, like, you can stick your Chinese. So it was all that kind of, you see, all Ferguson's fault. I Chinese as well, I thought.
I always remember saying, you know, all these things that were wrong with this villa, and then like this delay, and saying, and the pool's fucking freezing.
It was a plunge pool. It was freezing. I've got five children. Christ.
The pool was cold.
Would you have stayed there?
You know,
you just told me you've been skiing five times in the last year. Where do you get the money for that?
I like it.
Jesus. It's loaded. So that was the start of it.
Yeah, no, sure. The clock's against us. So just one last question on it, really. You know when you're in the office and you've just watched the video and the stuff you're referencing, Roy talks about it in his book, what he said to Kiraz, I won't repeat it here. You know, you're a bit of a go at Ferguson. Does any part of you, when you're in that zone where stuff's coming out, think, I am crossing the line here.
No, you got to relax yourself here a second. Because same with Saipan, people say, oh, you know, could you handle it differently?
Yeah.
Could you stood back? What, and let people walk all over you? The key is, when I watch this video, whatever about was said afterwards, listen, I'm sure you're going to later, same with Saipan, people making accusations against you, and you're sitting there going, what do you want to say? Going, no, that's fine. You have to fight your corner. You have to defend yourself. Hmm. And the key for me is whatever the video on Gary said, it was intense. We had a lot of heated discussions over the years, sometimes as a team. But you got to roll with that. That's grown men. We're fighting for the same things. There is going to be a bit of argy-bargy. I'm sure there's people here working in industries where things get heated. I didn't leave the office that day and thinking, that's the end of my career at Manchester. Okay. I didn't think so.
Okay.
Listen, I didn't think it was all great. You know, let's go for a bite to eat tonight. But I'm thinking, this is all. And sometimes I think when you have these debates or heated arguments, I think it's good. I think it's good because you're all looking for the same things. You're all hungry. You want the same thing. No problem. But if you think I'm going to sit there, I don't care if it's Alex Ferguson or the Pope, and they start saying, yeah, you got to do it. Yeah, I'm going to fight my corner. What do you want me to do?
Yeah. But then,
because I tell you, if I sat there and said that, and I got into the players, they'd be going, hey, what's up with him? Just like a few months earlier when Carlos Queiroz threw the bib at me when you just stand up front.
Okay.
I had to take that and go, all right, listen, sometimes the coaches are upset with something. I'll roll with it.
Yeah.
But when they treat you with such disrespect and then put statements in front of you and say, all right, thanks for 11 and a half years. Folks, not you, was pulling me a couple of days later going, listen, Roy, your days are numbered. We get to January or let's get to the end of the season. Okay. And I tell you what, I was at the club when Brian Robson left. I was at the club when Steve Bruce left. Two brilliant servants for Man United, and I didn't like the way they were treated at the end. So people talk about Ferguson's man management. don't be kidded on by all of it either. Yeah. Don't be kidded on by all that. And Ferguson came out afterwards going, well, I always done what was best for United, Manchester United. Nonsense. His son played for the club, won a league medal, Darren. Very lucky. His... his brother was chief scout for Man United for a long time. Hey, listen, I'm surprised his wife wasn't involved on the staff somewhere. Darren, his son, was at Preston one time. Darren loses his job. A couple of young players on loan for Man United. Guess what happens the next day? They're pulled out of Preston. Is that what's doing the best for Man United? Do me a favour.
When...
In Pret-a-Manger this morning, I was so calm.
When did you last speak to Ferguson?
Yesterday. Not since then, obviously.
Not one conversation?
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No, no interest in speaking to the man.
Nothing even over the past year, the ill health made you think, maybe I'll just give him a call, maybe life's too short.
No. When he apologises to me. And David Gill. No problem.
Off the ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.